and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Jill Robbins, Dan Novak, and John Russell. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Hong Kong police raided a pro-democracy newspaper on Thursday and arrested five officials at the publication. Hundreds of officers were involved in a search of computers and notebooks used by reporters at Apple Daily. Hong Kong Security Secretary John Lee described the newspaper offices as a crime scene. He said the operation was aimed at individuals at the publication who use reporting as a tool to endanger national security. Police said they were acting on evidence. They said stories published by the newspaper had been used to help persuade foreign forces to place sanctions on Hong Kong and China. The raid was carried out under a national security law passed in June 2020 by the government in Beijing. Critics of the law say it seeks to silence dissent and crush freedoms promised to Hong Kong when it was passed to mainland China in 1997. Rights of the territory's citizens were to be guaranteed under its basic law for 50 years. Apple Daily has long been one of the most outspoken defenders of Hong Kong's freedoms. It said in a statement that the police action left it speechless, but it promised to continue its reporting. The newspaper said 38 of its computers had been seized by police. Among those arrested were Apple Daily's chief editor, Ryan Law, and Chung Kim Hung, the chief executive of its publisher, Next Digital. An official said police also froze $2.3 million in assets belonging to three companies linked to Apple Daily. The newspaper's owner, Jimmy Lai, is currently serving a 20-month prison sentence after being found guilty of taking part in unapproved pro-democracy protests in 2019. His assets have also been frozen under the national security law. The Chinese government's representative office in Hong Kong said in a statement that it supported the action. It noted that while the city's basic law guarantees the freedoms of speech and the press, those rights cannot conflict with the bottom line of national security. Freedom of the press is not a shield for illegal activities, the office said. The head of the Hong Kong Journalists Association, Chris Yung, criticized the raid and arrests in an online news conference. The national security law, he warned, was being used as a weapon against media officials and reporters. He added that the court order permitting police to raid Apple Daily had violated the reporters' ability to protect their materials. He said that was an important part of press freedom. Self-censorship will get worse if journalists are not sure whether they are able to protect their sources of information, said Jung. I'm Brian Lin.
For many generations, the homeland of the Uru people was not land at all. It was the salty waters of Lake Popo. The Uru, people of the water, would build a sort of family island using plants when they married. They would live on what they could take from the wide, shallow lake in the highlands of southwestern Bolivia. They collected eggs, fished, hunted flamingos and birds. When they fell in love, the couple built their own raft, said Abdon Choke, leader of Punaka, a town of about 180 people. Now, what was Bolivia's second largest lake is gone. It dried up about 5 years ago, the result of shrinking mountain glaciers and water use for farming and mining operations. During rainy season, small bodies of water reappear in areas of the former lake. Now, the Uru of Lake Popo live near the lake's salt-crusted former shoreline in three small settlements. Around 600 people are looking for ways to make a living and trying to save even their culture. Luis Valero is leader of the Uru communities around the lake. He said, "Our grandfathers thought the lake would last all their lives, and now my people are near extinction because our source of life has been lost." Not long before the lake was lost, the Uru Cholo language died. Younger generations learned Spanish in school. At work, they use other more common indigenous languages, Aymara and Quechua. To save their identities, the communities are trying to revive their language, or at least its closest related language. Aided by the government and a local foundation, they have invited teachers from a related group of the Uru Chipaya, near the Chilean border to the west, to teach that language to their children. It is one of 36 officially recognized Bolivian languages. In these times, everything changes, but we are making efforts to maintain our culture, Valero said. Our children have to recover the language to distinguish us from our neighbors. Abelina Choque is a 21-year-old student who would like to teach mathematics someday. She said, "The Uru Chipaya teachers use numbers, songs, and common expressions to teach the language. It's a little difficult to pronounce," she added. The pandemic has made learning the language even more difficult. The teachers have been unable to hold in-person classes during the pandemic, leaving students to learn from texts, videos, and radio programs. Punaka Mayor Rufino Choque said the Uru began settling on the lakeshore in the past 30 years as the lake began to get smaller. However, there were already people living on most of the lands around the lake. "We are ancient, but we have no territory. Now, we have no source of work, nothing," said the 61-year-old mayor. The round homes of Punaka are lined up along a dirt road. With no land for farming, The young men work as laborers, herders, or miners in nearby towns or more distant cities. They see the money and they don't return, says Amnon. Some of the women make handicrafts of straw. The broader Uru people once controlled a large part of the area. There are still branches around Peru and Lake Titicaca to the north, around the Chilean border, and near the Argentine border. I'm Jill Robbins.
An early heat wave has been bringing high temperatures to the western United States. Scientists are warning that the extreme heat and dry conditions might become normal. Many places in the American West have been reporting drought conditions for many years. Park Williams is an associate professor in geography with the University of California, Los Angeles. He said, "Heat waves are getting worse in the West because the soil is so dry." Williams said soil in the western half of the country is the driest it has been since 1895. For example, Phoenix, Arizona is having some of the highest temperatures this week. On Wednesday, it reached 46 degrees Celsius. We could have 2, 3, 4, 5 of these heat waves before the end of the summer, Williams said. An extreme heat warning is in effect until at least Sunday. Reports say in Palm Springs, California, the temperature reached 49 degrees Celsius on Tuesday. Weather experts say a high-pressure system spread over the West this week, causing unusually hot days. Officials in California asked people to save electricity for a few hours on Thursday. They asked people to set their air conditioning systems to 25.5 degrees Celsius or higher, and turn off unnecessary lights and electronics. Officials said they do not expect power outages, but that could change if temperatures remain high in the coming days. The San Francisco Bay Area has also had higher than normal temperatures. Kathleen Kraft works at a shelter in the city of Livermore, California. She said temperatures had reached 37 degrees Celsius, but just one woman came to a special cooling center. Kraft said she expects more people as temperatures rise. Denver, Colorado also saw a record high of 38 degrees Celsius on Tuesday. And Western Colorado is under an extreme heat warning. The area is also experiencing extremely dry conditions. John Salmon is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. He said Las Vegas, Nevada will likely remain at 45 degrees Celsius or hotter through Sunday. Temperatures could break the record high of 47 degrees Celsius set in June of 2017. "This is pretty impressive. We're seeing all-time records fall," Salmon said. In Montana, temperatures over 38 degrees Celsius have made it harder to fight forest fires. The fires have gotten much larger in size, destroying homes and forcing evacuations. High winds have spread the flames and forced the crash landing of a firefighting helicopter. At least 14 new fires have been reported in Montana and Wyoming since Tuesday. Dry weather was also being felt in Idaho. Officials there are preparing for a difficult forest fire season. Nick Nossler is a meteorologist with the National Interagency Fire Center. He told state officials this week that 80% of Idaho is very dry. He said Idaho had its second driest spring in the last 126 years. I'm Dan Novak.
Summer is near in the United States, and with summer comes higher temperatures and strong storms. Americans often discuss the bad and good weather that is taking place by using special kinds of verbs known as linking verbs. In today's everyday grammar, we will explore the connection between linking verbs, grammar, and the weather. Linking verbs are verbs that often describe a state of existence or a change to a new state. These verbs generally come before an adjective or noun phrase and connect it to the subject of the sentence. Consider this statement.
She seems happy.
The linking verb seem connects happy, an adjective, to she, the subject of the sentence. The verb is helping to describe the subject's state of existence. English speakers often use linking verbs to describe the state of the weather, or to talk about a change in state in the weather. They often use three common linking verbs for these purposes: feel, get, and look. Let's explore each of these in turn. The linking verb feel can describe physical or mental sensations. When English speakers use feel to talk about the weather, they generally use it to describe a physical sensation. You might hear a person say, for example,
"It feels humid."
Or,
"It feels muggy."
Muggy is a term that means unpleasantly warm and humid. Note that in both examples, the word "it" means the weather. English speakers often use "get," another linking verb, to describe changes in the weather. For example, you might hear a person talking about the change to hotter weather by saying,
"It's getting hot."
Or they might describe a change to cloudy weather, as in,
"It's getting cloudy."
Our final linking verb, look, can describe positive or negative feelings. Imagine you hear a person planning a walk on a summer day. They might say,
"We have to go for a walk. It looks lovely outside."
But imagine that same person saw stormy weather coming. The person might say,
"We shouldn't go for a walk. Those clouds look scary."
Listen to the following discussion. Note how many times you hear linking verbs.
"We should go for a run. My weather app says it looks nice outside."
"Are you crazy? The weather looks terrible. It's getting hot and humid."
The next time you hear Americans talk about the weather, in a film, TV show, or in person, make careful note of what kinds of verbs they use to talk about the weather. You will probably hear some of the linking verbs that were described today, and perhaps some other verbs too. Then try to use what you have learned in your own discussions. I'm John Russell.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, Wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are continuing our story about Abraham Lincoln. He led the United States during the Civil War, which lasted from 1861 to 1865. In that conflict, the Southern Confederacy battled the Union, the states that supported the federal government. Southern states wanted to make their own laws, including those that protected slavery. They were afraid that President Lincoln would use the power of the federal government to ban slavery in their states, as well as in other areas. So 11 Southern states withdrew from the rest of the country. They stopped recognizing the power of the central government. President Lincoln did not think states had the right to withdraw. He said he was fighting to reunite the country. But in time, he accepted that the Civil War would also be a fight to end slavery. Lincoln is known for several qualities as a wartime president. One was how he led the military campaign. As president, Lincoln worked with top military officials to create a plan. They realized that the Union had more resources and more men who could fight than the Confederate forces. So they planned to surround the Southern states, cut off their supplies, and prevent foreign powers from helping the Confederacy. Lincoln hoped the Union's generals could execute the plan quickly and end the war as soon as possible. But the generals were guarded. They did not want to harm their soldiers if they did not have to. They also knew the Confederacy had a skilled commander in General Robert E. Lee. Troops under another Confederate general, Thomas Stonewall Jackson, also defeated the Union Army in several early battles. Lincoln was frustrated with the war effort. He wanted generals who would not only win battles, but chase after the opposing forces and destroy them so they could not fight again. In one famous telegram, he wrote to his top general, George McClellan. Lincoln said, "If General McClellan does not want to use the army, I would like to borrow it for a time." Finally, Lincoln replaced McClellan. Then he replaced McClellan's replacements. Lincoln changed the presidency by being actively involved as a commander-in-chief of the military. He also greatly expanded the powers of the chief executive. Lincoln believed that, during war, the president had powers that were greater than those of Congress and the Supreme Court. As a result, he took many actions that critics, and even some supporters, considered illegal under the U.S. Constitution. For example, Lincoln spent millions of dollars in federal money without getting permission from Congress. He also limited freedom of the press, restricted mail service, and declared martial law in some places, even when the situation did not require military action. Most notably, Lincoln temporarily suspended the writ of habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is an important right in the American legal tradition. It means that people who are under arrest have the right to appear personally in court. But at some periods, Lincoln ignored that right. He said the Confederacy's rebellion justified his actions. And he said extreme measures were necessary to reunite the country. One of Lincoln's most important legacies relates to slavery. The issue was at the heart of the American Civil War. For most of his career, Lincoln spoke against slavery, but he did not try to bar the custom in states where it already existed. He agreed to leave slavery in the South alone. Lincoln also did not really believe in racial equality, and he worried that if slavery ended in the United States, blacks and whites would not be able to live peacefully together. But as the war continued, Lincoln changed his mind about how to deal with the issue. For one thing, anti-slavery activists were urging Lincoln to end slavery for moral reasons. Lincoln also considered tactical reasons, those related to the war. He saw that enslaved people in the South were escaping to join Union armies in the North. Their actions helped the Union effort. Lincoln also wanted to prevent England or France from helping the South. The Southern states were important trading partners for Europe, but the English and French people had rejected slavery. Lincoln hoped that if the Union also rejected slavery, European countries would support the North, or at least not support the South. So Lincoln waited until the Union won a major battle in Antietam, Maryland. Then he announced that he was using his power as a wartime president to order the end of slavery in the Confederate States. He produced a document called the Emancipation Proclamation. It said that enslaved people in the rebelling states were forever free. Historians note that the act was important and revolutionary, but it was mostly symbolic. The federal government was not able to enforce the order at the time, and it did not deal with enslaved people in other areas. But the Emancipation Proclamation was the beginning of the end of legal slavery in the country. During the rest of his presidency, Lincoln worked in support of an anti-slavery amendment to the Constitution. That amendment, the 13th, was approved in 1865. It officially outlawed slavery across the country. Next week, we will finish the story of Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.